You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, June 6th, feast day of St. Maria Goretti. St. Maria, pray for us. Looking forward to being with you today. No guests, so all the more reason for you to call and chime in. Love to hear from you anytime during the program today. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Too bad I'm not an impressionist, you know? Let's think about radio. If you're a good impressionist, you could conduct your own interview with only yourself. Just pretend to be various characters. Maybe I'll have to work on that just a little bit. Anyway, several things to get to today. As I think I told you yesterday, over this weekend, saw an old Western that I'd never seen before. It was a John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart classic, the man who shot Liberty Valance. One of, at least I know, two Westerns they appeared in together. Also in The Shootist, which I think was the last film the Duke ever did. But, and if you know more combinations between the two of them, let me know. But anyway, I've not seen a lot of John Wayne films, believe it or not. And I'd always heard this was one of the best, so it was on. I saw part of it, and then I actually rented it on YouTube. But as I watched it, I realized that there are some things in this movie that have some pretty relevant application to the world we're living in right now. This world of what seems like daily doses and reports of random senseless violence. And how do we live in a violent world? And particularly how in the West do we live in the face of all this violence? So anyway, we'll get into that a little bit later in the program. Lessons from Liberty Valance, or from the movie anyway. Also, Lee Marvin, by the way, excellent bad guy in that film. And staying in the black and white celluloid era, Why I Want to Be a Friend Like Andy Griffith. An episode of the Andy Griffith Show I saw that really got me thinking about friendship and virtue. Also, The Most Frightening Dead People, a special magazine for the anxious, knowing when to have a baby, and why some athletes really are worth the money. Of course, we'll spin the Dollar Catechism wheel. We'll look back in history and give out our What Were You Thinking nominees, all on the program today. Again, if you want to call or text, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. Ethan's standing by to take your call. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter. Well, no more mice so far. To continue the mouse-killing spree I've been on since I've discovered the beauty of the twisty tie on the mousetrap. Though yesterday, when I came home, my wife said, Bruce, our son, said that you caught another mouse in that trap back there. So sure enough, I walked in there just next to the entertainment center where I had placed it, kind of tucked it back. My eyes aren't real good, mind you. All right, I've got, my arms aren't long enough to read. Old age. But I see the trap has been tripped, and I see something small and white and gray snapped in the trap. And I'm like trying to, I'm thinking, oh, I think it's a baby mouse. I think that's what it is. And so I bent down by the when I finally picked up the trap, I realized it was not a mouse at all, but my son, as a joke, had taken one of our the feminine products from our toiletry closet, given the fact that our son has four older sisters, there's a ready supply, and he crafted it in. Made it look, even drew a little eyes on there, made it look like a baby mouse. So anyway, well played, son. Well played. 573-4-BREAD-4, if you want to chime in. So still no mice to be had. Anyway, as I said, today, the feast day of St. Maria Goretti. Maria Goretti, one of the youngest canonized saints in the history of the church, who died back in 1902. One of those rare situations where St. Maria Goretti's mother actually attended her canonization. Not only her mother, but the man who killed her, I believe, also attended her canonization. Now, as the story goes, she was born to a farming family. Father died when she was nine, and they had to share a house with another family, the Serenellis. By the way, I didn't even know about St. Maria Goretti until after I had become Catholic. And the reason I remember it, actually, it was, I'm sorry, just before I became Catholic, because when we became Catholic in 2005, it was in the middle of August when it came into full communion. I started working for the Catholic Diocese July 1st, 2005. So I was actually employed full-time by the church 6 weeks before I was officially Catholic. And so we have regular masses there at the offices of the diocese, often celebrated by the bishop. It's a real privilege of working there. Anyway, I remember it was very early on then, July 6th to be specific, after I had started, that the feast day of St. Maria Goretti came up. That's the first time I'd heard of her and was fascinated by the story. Anyway, Maria, as a young 11-year-old, took over household duties while her mother, brothers, and sister worked in the fields, sharing this home with the Serenelli family. One afternoon, Alessandro, the Serenelli son, made sexual advances to her. While she refused to submit to him, he stabbed her 14 times. She was taken to the hospital, but she died forgiving him. He was arrested, convicted, and jailed. After 3 years, he repented, and when eventually released from prison, he visited her mother to beg forgiveness, which she granted. He later became a lay brother in a monastery. He died in 1970. She was beatified in 1947 and canonized in 1950, both by the late Pope Pius XII. Now, it's interesting because it was about this time last year, on the feast day of St. Maria Goretti, there was a little mini controversy of sorts that broke out in the Catholic blogosphere, which is its own kind of little world. And all the variety and diversity you have within the Catholic Church, you can find on the Catholic blogosphere. And there was some controversy over St. Maria Goretti, some very prominent Catholic bloggers who wanted to be very clear, especially some very prominent women Catholic bloggers who wanted to be very clear that how the story of St. Maria Goretti's sainthood had been used at times in an unfortunate way to shame young women, particularly those who were victims of sexual assault, maybe not intentionally, but the idea was that she was a young woman of virtue because she resisted her attacker, and that it sent a message when used in this way subconsciously to young women that it would be better to be killed than to be sexually assaulted, notwithstanding the fact that there are some young women who certainly who are overpowered by sexual assault, and also others who perhaps submitted out of fear for their life should not be made to feel as though they've somehow failed, that the onus is always on the attacker. And their point was simply this: why was Maria Goretti a saint? What made her a woman of such a remarkable virtue, young girl really of such remarkable virtue, is that her concern was for her attacker. In fact, she said as much in the midst of the assault, that she didn't want her attacker to commit this terrible crime and have this guilt upon his soul. And of course, her virtue shone in her willingness to forgive him before he died. Now, I've got a daughter who will be 11 in a little over a week. So this story has extra significance to me, and particularly in a world and in an age in which it's very tough to grow up as a young girl. As difficult as it would have been, I'm sure, for St. Maria Goretti growing up in a life of relative poverty, to grow up as a 10 or 11-year-old today in our hypersexualized world Very, very difficult. St. Maria Goretti, a very appropriate patron saint, I think, for young women who understand and learn at a very early age what it means to be objectified and how the world has chosen to value young girls and young women based solely upon their utility as a sexual object. And it doesn't take much. I mean, my goodness, stand in the grocery store checkout line, look at the magazines around you, a perusal of the online world. It's a tragic thing. And as we've said before, the real epidemic of pornography in our world is not just people looking at it, but it's that increasingly through technology that people, and particularly young girls, have an opportunity to participate in it, to sexualize themselves, to buy into this understanding that you are worth as a young woman. Your value is predicated upon your ability to be used. And some young women grow up thinking that's really the only way to be valued. So St. Maria Goretti, pray for us. Help us to get past some of our splitting of hairs in the blogosphere and just realize the remarkable young girl and young woman of virtue that you were, and your profound understanding of the dignity of sexual love, your concern for your attacker, and your refusal to be viewed only as an object. We'll be back with more St. Maria Goretti. Pray for us. This is The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on this Wednesday, July 6th, the 481st year since the beheading of St. Thomas More, his feast day, of course, July 22nd, along with St. John Fisher, but it was Fisher who was beheaded on June 22nd, More 2 weeks later on July 6th, so rest in peace and pray for us. St. Thomas More. A little bit later in the program, we're going to talk about the most frightening dead people of all. We'll get into all that. Anyway, happy, by the way, Eid al-Fitr for our Muslim friends breaking their Ramadan fast. I guess it is today, I believe. Today or yesterday, I can't remember which. Anyway, Ramadan, a period of fasting, 29 or 30 days, typically. And I think it's a movable feast or movable fast in the practice of Islam. But I noticed a good friend of mine yesterday who has some Muslim neighbors tweeted out, my friend's a Catholic, by the way, just gave my first ever Eid gift, make the world bigger. And certainly I appreciate that. As I've talked about on the program, yes, there are issues intrinsic to Islam that make it more challenging, I think, to reconcile with Western values, but not insurmountable obstacles. And there have been devout practicing Muslims who do not embrace the violent code of the radical jihadists who have been living among us peacefully from the earliest days of this republic. And so, again, we really cannot buy into this fear-mongering and Islamophobia that's rampant right now. Have to rise above it. And we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later in the program when we talk about the man who shot Liberty Valance and this violent world in which we live. An interesting question of the day today. I don't know whether you're going to know how to answer it. But, you know, like I said, no guest today. So you got time to let it percolate and to call up and want to see if you want to get creative with this, either by calling or texting 573-4BREAD-4 or emailing me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or posting your response on Facebook or Twitter. We have three persons today. Of course, I always check this every day in advance of the program. You know, things that have happened on this day, famous birthdays and all the rest. Three people turning 70 years old today. And those three people, quite a varied lot. You've got former President George W. Bush turning 70 years old today. You've got Sylvester Stallone, the actor, turning 70 years old today. And you've got Peter Singer, the philosopher, turning 70 years old today, the tenured philosopher at Princeton. Now, my guess is that for most people, they're more likely to have heard of the first two, of course, and not the third, Peter Singer. But I think the argument could be made that in the course of history, that philosophers have had more of an impact than politicians or actors, no doubt. And Peter Singer, who is vilified, in my view, for good reason, in the pro-life community for his system of ethics. I will give him kudos for being consistent, by and large, as an ethicist, even though I think his philosophical worldview, his ethical worldview, is very unfortunate, because he is a classic, what we would call the utilitarian in his approach to ethics. Ethicists who believe in utilitarianism do not believe in appeals to any sort of transcendent value or virtue in things. Peter Singer, known for writing really a seminal text in animal liberation theory called Animal Liberation, in which he coined the term speciesism, which is in his view, the unjustified preferencing of the human species in value by nature and ontologically and intrinsically over other animal species. He said human beings should have no special place other than the fact that human beings are among those groups of creatures that are sentient beings. They have the ability to think. And so this is where Peter Singer comes from in his view that an adult dog has is worthy of more consideration than a newborn human being, because an adult dog actually has a greater degree of sentience, of awareness of the world, than a newborn infant. And this is why Peter Singer not only condones, of course, abortion, but even infanticide up to a certain point, because his whole utilitarian ethic says it's about maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain. And because a newborn is limited in the degree of pleasure it can experience as well as in the degree of pain. And so those things can be kept in mind. Like I said, he at least is consistent, because there are a lot of people out there who believe in killing a child just before it exits the birth canal, but not afterward, which feels very arbitrary indeed. So anyway, here's my question. These three, George W. Bush, Sylvester Stallone, and Peter Singer, if you had to give each of them a birthday gift today, what would be an appropriate birthday gift? And you may not, maybe you can only come up with one for one of them or two of them. You don't have to have all three. But I'd be interested in your thoughts on that. What would you give them? 573-4BREAD-4. 573-4BREAD-4. You know, would you give Peter Singer, a copy of Pope St. John Paul II's great work, The Gospel of Life, Evangelium Vitae, and have him read it? What would you give Sylvester Stallone and President George W. Bush? Now, the reason I say philosophers have more impact is because of the idea that concept that ideas have consequences, which they do. Things that are being bandied about and debated in the halls of academia today will make their way out gradually into the practical world. You can count on it. So don't for a minute think philosophers are just ivory tower eggheads who are detached from the real world. Now, the real world often flows from the world of ideas. And that's why a guy like Peter Singer is remarkably influential and remarkably dangerous. So their 70th birthday, all three today in 1946. 5734-BREAD-4, call or text, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Of course, not only talked yesterday, as we discussed on the program, of Kevin Durant making his decision to go to the Golden State Warriors, the relentlessly opinionated Stephen A. Smith, NBA analyst for ESPN, said it was the weakest move he'd ever seen by a superstar because he said it was an implicit admission by Durant that he didn't have what it takes by himself or along with Russell Westbrook to raise Oklahoma City into title contending status, even though they were so close this year. And then he had to go latch his wagon onto the Stephen Curry train. And I think that's a little harsh in my opinion. But something that did surprise me yesterday was seeing that of the great duos in NBA history, where Durant and Westbrook from the Oklahoma City Thunder stacked up, and there has been only one duo in the history of the NBA, and one group of two people who have had more games in which they each scored 25 points than Durant and Westbrook, and that is Jerry West and Elgin Baylor for the Lakers. Durant and Westbrook, of course, no more for the two of them, I guess. Hard to imagine they'll ever be on the same team again, but currently second place behind those two guys. Anyway, but the article that I came across yesterday from 538.com, which is my favorite stat geek website, talked about how in some of the crazy money that was being talked about in the NBA, people like who's the guy that played for Golden State this past year? And he's escaping me. Who just signed with the Dallas Mavericks? 4 years, $94 million. Harrison Barnes, really? 4 years, ninety. I mean, crazy money being thrown around, which I guess tells you how much the NBA is worth. But I'm gonna post a link to this article on the show's Facebook page about Russell Westbrook, the erstwhile remaining Oklahoma City Thunder left behind by his teammate Durant. It says that Russell Westbrook is really worth $344 million. And that really the elite of the elite superstars in the NBA, if you lay it out simply on a sort of actuarial basis, the money that they bring in versus the money they cost, that all of the top NBA players, whether you're talking about LeBron James, Stephen Curry, and so forth, they are all underpaid. Now, there are plenty of guys that are overpaid, but in terms of the superstars, they are all underpaid. I know it's certainly a wacky, out-of-proportion value system, but anyway, it's worth looking at this piece because it'll change your opinion on things and make you realize that in the world of the NBA and the kind of money that's being thrown around, these guys really are giving their owners bang for their buck. We'll come back from the break here in just a minute. I'll give you our What Were You Thinking awards. We've kind of run out of time here. Got some interesting one, including one that involves one advertising agency that thought a pooping seagull would convince you to buy their product. Which reminds me of the joke, two people walking down the beach. One of them looks up and a seagull poops right in his eye. This is his friend says, "Oh man, don't worry about it. I'll go get some toilet paper." And the other guy says, "Nah, don't worry. He's probably miles away by now." We'll be back. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show on this Wednesday. Man, how did we already get to Wednesday? That's a beautiful thing about a holiday weekend, isn't it? When you've got a Monday off, too. Not only did you get extra time, but then when you get into the work week, it's shorter as well. So be thankful for the little things, no doubt. 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to call, be part of the program today here on this feast day of St. Maria Goretti. St. Maria, pray for us. 573-4BREAD-4. Call or text, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. As I said, I'm asking a harder question than usual at risk to oftentimes what kind of or what number of responses those questions garner. Usually if I ask you maybe your favorite Beatle or your favorite hostess treat, it's a little easier for you to come up with something. When I ask you something kind of complex here, like I said, it's the 70th birthday today of Sylvester Stallone, former President George W. Bush, and the philosophy professor and author Peter Singer. If you had to buy a gift for each of them, which would you buy? And you don't have to tell me all of them. You don't even have to come up with one gift that would apply to all three. Not making it that hard. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I guess the only one of the three of those who's Catholic is Sylvester Stallone. Sylvester Stallone, born and raised Catholic, has sort of drifted in and out of the church. I'm not sure what his current status is. I think the most recent public comment, he says he doesn't believe in organized religion, which, as my friend Mark Shea likes to say, that's the perfect reason to be Catholic. Any experience that you have in a local parish. But Sylvester Stallone, you know, of course, as it has been argued, once you're a Catholic, you're always a Catholic. You may be a bad Catholic or a non-practicing Catholic, but sorry, you can't lose it. And George W. Bush, I would say, second in that mix, in that he's not officially Catholic, but I know is very sympathetic to the Catholic Church and could barely contain himself when they had the opportunity as president to meet really each of the prior two popes. Of course, he was out of office before Pope Francis took over the throne of Peter. And but Peter Singer would seem to be the furthest from a Catholic sensibility, but you never know. Pray for him. Pray for all three while you're at it. Prayer is always a good thing. 573-4BREAD-4 if you've got a comment or a question. All right, so we do have some What Were You Thinking Award nominees for the day, and let's get right to them. Spanning the globe to find examples of human stupidity, go dumb or go home. This is a great newspaper from Great Britain. A driver and gardener managed to skip shifts for up to 15 years before the council where they worked noticed. The two men from southern Spain have been fired after their employer's human resources department discovered neither of them had turned up for a day at work during 2015 or 2016. Human resources then investigated the man and found a whole lot more absences. The town hall of Jerez de la Frontera said two representatives of the General Confederation of Labor Union could have gone years without coming to work. According to a written statement by the men themselves, the situation could date back 15 years. The union, of course, have defended the men, claiming the absences were simply accumulated days and leave of other employees who shared holiday. During the investigation, one of the men returned to work and the other handed in a written statement explaining he had accumulated the hours of his colleagues. What? Listen, I had a relative who worked for city government one time, and I literally, there was nothing I think she could do to get fired. So it just goes to show you what happens when you get a job with, I guess, with some unions or some government positions anyway. So for the HR department that didn't notice their absences, you get you are one of our nominees for the What Were You Thinking Award. Let's see. I know I got a couple of others here. because I want to hold off on the seagull one, because that's going to be our winner. Let's see. Almost there. Oh, yeah, here we go. TV presenter impales hand on television, on live TV, during a failed magic trick. This from down under. This is from Poland. A clip from the Polish show Question for Breakfast depicts presenter Marzena Rogalska. She holds her hand over one of three paper bags for a sketch on the program. She was expected to choose the right bag to slam her hand onto, a task fraught with danger as one of them contained a long hidden nail. The trick, performed by a Poland's Got Talent semifinalist, soon went horribly wrong. So I guess he won't be advancing beyond the semifinals. After he slammed down his hand on one of the bags, he encouraged the host to try the trick out. It seems she didn't have the magic touch required, because the bag she decided to slam her hand on down had a giant nail in it. As soon as her hand slapped down on live TV, she let out an ear-piercing shriek, the nail going, of course, through her hand. But as wonderful as those two are, we're going to give you the winner, and it's for an ad campaign. Again, as we say, go dumb or go home. This Nivea. A Nivea ad campaign that may be the dumbest thing you've ever seen, and was basically laughed out of the Cannes Advertising Awards. Evidently, and then you could actually say, I'm going to put a clip to this or a link to this on the show's Facebook page. Nivea created a mechanized seagull that, while children and families were frolicking on the beach, would fly overhead, I guess trying to emphasize the importance of sunscreen, and would literally, this mechanized seagull would poop sunscreen out of itself onto the children below. So sunscreen literally falling from the sky from the rear end of a mechanized seagull. What? Oh, my goodness. As one advertising judge said about the campaign, this is without a question at the cutting edge of technology and brand integration. I think, actually, they're also teaming up with the Royal National Institute for the Blind, because if you get this stuff in your eyes from the flying seagull, you'll probably need special attention. Didn't that happen in the book of Tobit or something like that? Anyway, what gets me is, you know, in these advertising, I mean, there had to be a group of people in a room that together decided, yes, this is a great idea. Let's have a mechanized seagull poop sunscreen. And that'll be what draws people to our product. Anyway, so that's our winner. If you've got a nominee, we'd love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Of course, big political news yesterday. The long-awaited, I think, but for most, little surprising announcement from the FBI's Director James Comey that there will not be charges forthcoming against Democratic presidential candidate and former First Lady and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton over Emailgate. And, you know, this is here's the sad place that we've come to in our current partisan political landscape, is that in some ways I really don't know how to react. And this is kind of where we've come. On the one hand, I'm, of course, extremely disturbed that we live in a day in which it seems like there's a different set of rules for the elite than there are the rest of us. And I guess, I mean, I'm a realist. That's always been the case to some degree, no matter what your political party. If you are among the so-called ruling class, you get a pass on things that the rest of us would have the book thrown at us for. And just the ridiculous spectacle of someone appointed by a Democratic administration exonerating, even despite the fact that they acknowledged that there were many, many improprieties that took place. It all came down, in their view, to intention. And, well, she didn't intend to do anything nefarious. And all of a sudden, intention becomes the governing characteristic. in terms of whether one is held accountable for their actions, it'll do nothing but breed a deep cynicism. But on the other hand, you know, had they gone through with an aggressive set of charges against the former first lady, I think it would be hard to discern how much of that was legitimate and how much of that was partisanship. This is the unfortunate place we've come. There's such a profound cynicism about the belief that anyone can come at a situation objectively anymore. It's really a shame, and I don't know what's going to happen in the future of this republic with the situation being it is. Nobody believes anybody. Nobody trusts anybody's motives. Nobody thinks anybody is giving anybody an unvarnished, objective take on anything. And that's kind of the sad place to where we've come. When we come back from the break, we'll look back in history a little bit. And I also want to talk about something interesting I was reminded of last night in reading about a very, very well-known Catholic convert in our world. So we'll be back in a minute. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to call or text. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on this Wednesday, July 6th. Our question of the day, if you had to give a 70th birthday gift to one of these three men who all turned 70 today, a politician, a president, and a philosopher, an actor, and a philosopher. I guess a president is a politician most of the time. Anyway, I digress. It's still early. George W. Bush, 70 today. Sylvester Stallone, blowing out his cake today. And Peter Singer, notorious Princeton philosopher, also celebrating a birthday. If you had to buy a gift for all three, what would it be? 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text. You can tweet your response or post it on Facebook, Mike Allen Show, the handle, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Today, National Fried Chicken Day, by the way. So if you're like me, you enjoy a good piece of fried chicken, one of my favorite foods, then you've got an excuse today. National Fried Chicken Day. Enjoy it. By the way, if you want to know our full lineup of programs and contributors literally from coast to coast, then go to breadboxmedia.com and check it all out. I highly recommend, you know, if you can't catch something live, check out the podcast. You can subscribe to podcasts too through iTunes or through Podbean or through Google Play. You can also become a friend of a particular show that you like, including a friend of this show if you'd like. Through a small monthly contribution, you receive exclusive access to online content. Check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. Become a friend of the show. We'd love to have you supporting this show if you appreciate it and like it. I was reading last night just a little bit. You know, I have books lying around here and there that I've read before. I'd like to pick them back up again. And I had a few minutes to spare. And I picked up this book, Rome, Sweet Home, by Scott and Kimberly Hahn. Scott Hahn, probably one of the best known, if not the best known, of the contemporary evangelical Christian to Catholicism converts. There was a time in my life I didn't know such persons ever existed. I knew plenty of former Catholics who had become evangelical Protestants, who had grown up with what I perceived Catholicism to be as a rather dry and dusty and rigid set of rules and regulations, not really a living and vibrant relationship with Jesus. That was my perspective anyway. And Scott Hahn, one of the first that I was aware of who had swum the Tiber, that river that runs through Rome, in the other direction. And his book, Rome Sweet Home, probably maybe the best known of the books that tell the story of someone's journey to the Catholic faith. He and his wife, Kimberly, pretty remarkable, particularly the division between the two of them on this journey. That's why on my journey into the Catholic faith, I was particularly thankful that my wife and I found ourselves on the journey together. I started it before she did, but given my wife's deep openness to the mystical vision and the beauty of truth, she caught up rather quickly and has long since passed me by. But anyway, just knowing that they were separated in the midst of this, a difficult thing indeed. It's a pretty remarkable book. I mean, if you can get past the title, I'll admit, if you're not a Catholic, reading a title like Rome Sweet Home sounds at best cheesy and at worst very off-putting and offensive. But it's a great book nonetheless. But what I'd forgotten about Scott Hahn, as is usually the case with these converts, is that he really came to faith in Christ years before he became a Catholic. In fact, he grew up with a very negative opinion of Catholics once he became an evangelical Christian, so much so that he, in fact, when he was given some Catholic items from his one Catholic relative, his Catholic grandmother, since he was the only other really religious person in the family, he ripped apart her rosaries and prayed that she would be set free from her Catholic chains. But one of the things I had forgotten in here is how Scott Hahn really credits in high school his initial conversion to Jesus Christ, his personal encounter with the living Lord, to a ministry called Young Life, which is an evangelical ministry to teenagers. It's not a church by any means, but they actually reach out in schools among teenagers, particularly try to reach out to kids who don't have a church home. And it was his experience with Young Life and on a Young Life retreat that really first awakened his faith in Christ. The reason that stood out to me is that my own niece, my 16-year-old niece, just returned from spending a week at a Young Life camp down in Georgia. She lives here where I do in beautiful Lexington, Kentucky, but she was on a Young Life trip to Georgia. And as my sister was telling me last night, her mother, that her daughter, my niece, considered it to be the greatest week in her life, and as she really came back on fire for her faith. So kudos to the work that Young Life does, because I think Scott Hahn, like myself and many other evangelicals who become Catholic, don't look back on their years before entering the Catholic Church as some sort of wasteland or as some aspect of their life that we had to reject in becoming Catholic. But rather, we see our experiences as Protestant Christians, as an evangelical Christians, as actually beginning us on that journey to Christ and awakening us to the reality of his love that found fulfillment in Catholicism, not a rejection of who we'd been. And so I would imagine that Scott Hahn, like I do, feels a great gratitude for that season in his life and what it meant to him, without which, I mean, let's think about this. If it hadn't been for Young Life, who knows whether we'd even know who Scott Hahn is. Not only might he not be Catholic, he might not even be a Christian at all. So kudos to Young Life. And what's one of the cool things, I think I've had him on, Michael Haverkamp, on this program, who works for the Young Life's national office as their liaison between Young Life and the Catholic Church. There are Catholic dioceses now who have entered into partnerships with Young Life. And it's a good thing indeed, I think, if it's done well. Sometimes the concern can be about proselytizing, sheep stealing, all the rest, or the fact that there are some in the Young Life organization who probably also, like Scott Hahn once did, have a negative view of Catholicism. But if you can guarantee that the aim in your community for Young Life is to get people involved in their own faith community of their families, there's no reason why Young Life can't be used to help evangelize fallen away Catholics or persons into the fold of Catholicism. So that was a pretty cool discovery last night. Pray for my niece, that the seeds sown in her through her experience at a Young Life camp will continue to flourish. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, if you want to call or text. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Let's look back at history a little bit on this day throughout the ages. As I said, on this day in 1535, St. Thomas More executed for treason. Of course, St. Maria Goretti, this her feast day as well. That's why Thomas More's feast day could not be today, I would imagine, because this is the day on which St. Maria Goretti died. But what else happened on this day? Well, 1348, there was a papal bull of Pope Clement VI issued during the Black Death stating Jews were not to blame and urging their protection. Wow. You know, we had Rodney Stark, sociologist from Baylor, on last month talking about how oftentimes popes were the ones who mitigated the deep anti-Semitism that already existed in the world long before the church came along. But sad that he had to actually point out that they were not to blame. On this day in 1415, I guess if we're going to talk about St. Thomas More, we can also talk about Jan Hus, who was burned at the stake. Probably one of the not our finer moments in the Catholic Church. Jan Hus burned for heresy after being promised that he would be safe. Let's see, in 1776, the American Declaration of Independence was announced on the front page of the Pennsylvania Evening Gazette after having been ratified, I guess, a couple days earlier than that. 1854, the first official meeting of the Republican Party took place in Jackson, Michigan. Let's see, 1923, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics was formed, the USSR. It is, of course, no more as of the early 1990s. But who would have thought that in the midst of it? That's always a good historical perspective thing to keep in mind. Who would have thought the collapse of the USSR would come so quickly? Yet there are so many institutions in our society or things that seem insurmountable that are really a house of cards. Such was the USSR. 1957, Althea Gibson, the first black tennis player to win a Wimbledon singles title, a full 18 years before Arthur Ashe would do so on the men's side. In 1957, John Lennon and Paul McCartney, then 16 and 15 years old, met for the first time as Lennon's rock group, The Quarrymen, performed at a church dinner. And on this day, 30 years ago, Boris Becker defeated Ivan Lendl. Poor Lendl. He, great tennis player, but never could win there at the All England Club there at Wimbledon. And Boris Becker, the young German phenom at the time. I wonder where he is these days. Anyway, we'll be back with a new hour. We're going to talk about the man who shot Liberty Valance, lessons in this world of violence in which we live. We'll also look back at another black and white, Andy Griffith. Well, I want to be a friend like Andy. All that in the second hour. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.